Hold on, you cut off.
Okay. Let's call the Economic Development Committee meeting of Tuesday, January 5th, 2021 to order. Happy New Year, everybody. Do we have any citizens' comments? Okay. Minutes for correction or approval from December 1st, 2020. Any comments or questions on the minutes?
I'm good.
Are we all good? Oh, and Marlis, I'm sorry. I don't know if you, I think you see everybody. We have Alderman Koch, Alderman Peters, and myself. Staff and Alderman Funkhouse are sitting in too. Okay. So we're good with the minutes, so we'll accept them as presented. Let's go on to new business, EDC 2021-01, the building permit report for November 2020.
All right, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Sorry. All right, so for in the 14 single family detached homes, I did a total number of 36 building permits in November. So predominantly a lot of single family modifications and besides the new homes, we had a lot of decks and things like that we're getting, actually, believe it or not, decks and fences. Lots of pools for next year were issued in November.
Any comments or questions on the building permit report?
Nope.
Okay, we're good with that. Let's go to EDC 2021-02, building inspection report for November 2020.
All right, in November, we did conduct 718 inspections altogether. We ended up outsourcing 105 of those inspections. Due to the increase in permitting and a lot of the work last month, we're having to outsource a little more and having to take 2 days of the week just to handle administrative work in the office and planner due especially. So that's why you'll see we're outsourcing more and more as the year has gone on.
Any comments or questions on the building inspection report from November?
Yep. I'm good.
Okay, we're good with that. Let's go on to three, EDC 2021-03, the property maintenance report for November 2020.
All right, in November we ended up hearing six cases before the hearing officer. Of those, the 206 Wolf Street was the only that was actually found liable for $750. That is a building that's kind of been, that was for weeds and grass. It's not an abandoned building, it's just, it's not used for anything commercially. The owner uses it for his own personal storage, my understanding is, but he doesn't like to cut the grass or pick up the trash or anything like that. So we had a complaint from several of the property owners in that area, and that's why that one ended up on hearing, and they did not show up to dispute that at the hearing officer.
Any comments or questions on the property maintenance report?
I got one thing, Jackie.
Yes?
Pete, regarding the Greenbrier sign, I see it was on there, like bottom of page one, I think. Greenbrier doesn't have an HOA, so how is that being addressed?
That is, the sign is on, is technically on city property. Greenbrier was supposed to have an HOA, but it never materialized.
No.
That's what I was told by Eric. It's city property. So I think that what I was told by Public Works was, since it's on city property, either you, Bart, would have to direct Eric to repair it or replace it, or else we would just take it down and not cause this money. And that's kind of, that's beyond my authority whether to make Eric do it or not. I brought it to Eric's attention, and he said that was always taken care of by a group of residents from that neighborhood, and now they're choosing not to take care of it anymore, so he doesn't know what to do with it. He explained to the person that complained about it that issue, and they said they were fine with figuring it out internally. But we haven't heard anything about that, so.
I seen it was down, and so I was wondering how we go about fixing that. I don't know who the individuals are that took care of it before. I didn't know if that's something that I need to reach out to people and they're out there, or what, so I kind of was looking for some direction as well.
That's something that, as Eric said, is the residents in that area are welcome to keep the sign there as long as they want to keep it there and maintain it. And if they decide they don't want to maintain it, the city will remove it. Unless the alderman and the mayor and city minister decide they want us to repair it, that's your guys' decision. I can't make that decision for the city's money.
I'm in your mind, so you've seen it. To repair it, the city would probably have a certain desire for how it gets repaired, right? Not just a couple of poles holding it back up.
Yeah, I would say that the least costly thing for the city would be probably to just have the residents in that area that are concerned put a new set of poles up and remount the sign and repaint it. But I'm assuming Public Works could easily do that if directed to do by the mayor or by Bart.
Okay.
It's not city property technically, but it's not city property.
Right.
So before we actually expend taxpayer money, we'd have to get approval from, you know.
That's it, Jackie.
Okay. So we're okay otherwise with that?
Yep.
All right. We're good. And let's go on to 4 EDC 2021-04, the Economic Development Report for December 2020. Might be Lynn out there.
Hi, everybody. So you have my report. Believe me, we were all grants all the time. All the time. So, but a lot got accomplished. A lot with the big grants directly to the state of Illinois, amazing amount through our city programs. So the numbers are in there kind of in black and white for you. We had 56 grants directly from the state to Yorkville businesses to the total of a little over $3 million. And then our program of $400,000 to 42 businesses. And I know Aaron's been working hard with everybody in the 24 hours getting all the documents to them because we're getting it turned around amazingly quickly. It's amazing. And they're all so grateful. I don't know if anybody has any other questions. But
Alderman Freeman, are you your hand out there?
I just wanted to commend you all, Aaron, Lynn, Bart, Eric Purcell. I've spoken with, I'd say, about a half dozen business owners who were surprised that you actually did what you said you were going to do. I'm quoting, paraphrasing. So huge props on standing up for Yorkville businesses. I can tell you as a small business owner myself that it is a terrifying time to be in business and to not really know if you should be planning a week or 2 weeks or a month in advance is a very strange place to sit because it makes everything else in life a lot more difficult. So I just wanted to thank you again. As the start of a brand new year, to have somebody like Mayor, who is incredibly approachable in conversation, call you and say, hey, we're going to give you some money. Why? Because we want you to stay in business. That's how you support your community. So high five to everybody involved. I really appreciate it.
Ditto.
Do you have other comments or questions? Great job. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Aaron, everybody. Bart, thank you. Okay, let's go to 5, EDC 2021-05, the annual foreclosure report on the back side of this. Who is reporting on that?
That's me.
Oh, hi, Jason.
Hey, so, every year we do a report looking at the foreclosures from the years previous. So from 2019 to 2020, we saw a pretty drastic decrease in foreclosures. Almost 63%. You'll notice on the first graph after March, foreclosures almost were non-existent in the city. I don't know if anybody's aware of this, but that's mostly due to COVID and this pandemic, if you've heard of it. So the CARES Act was passed, and there was some significant effect had for total foreclosure numbers because of a forbearance period granted to everyone. So the forbearance period allowed people to not pay make their mortgage payments for up for a year. You apply every 3 months. So obviously after March, that had a huge effect on the numbers. We're still gonna compare them this year and take what little data we had and take a look, and we'll see, maybe we might end up next year.
Okay.
So for the most part, the one thing about, so we saw a decrease in 63%, and on that first graph, you'll kind of see the numbers for January, February, March were about the same, one or two extra here or there. When we do a ward breakdown, Ward 3 had the most foreclosures, with a total of 11, and Ward 4 saw the biggest decrease. Ward 3, interestingly, had 11, and in 2019 they had 14, so in 3 months they almost equaled the years past. So projecting out, it's possible they may have surpassed, you know, most likely, but again, we don't quite know that for sure. So a subdivision breakdown. Again, Bristol Bay, which is in Ward 3, had the highest amount of foreclosures in 2020. They had 7, which surpassed the 4 they had the year previously. And then Autumn Creek, on the plus side, saw no foreclosures in 2020, where they have, and typically over the past few years, they have 6 to 8. So that's pretty good. And breaking it down by property group, single family residential remains the most foreclosed types of units in Yorkville. It's our most popular, most product that we have. Obviously a large decrease from 39 down to 13. Also commercial properties and foreclosures on that saw a decline as well, most likely due to the CARES Act as well. So in summary, in a monthly breakdown, we did a comparison from 2015 to 2020 to kind of see, is there trends, or we always see high foreclosures in the winter and then they go away and come back. But in general, there's really no big foreclosure season over the past 6 years. We typically do see a lot in the beginning of the year and then a decline, but that's not necessarily true because the other 2 years we saw increases. So it really is just, fluctuates over time, and obviously this year it went way down since the beginning of the year, since we went to basically zero. Ward breakdown, Ward 3 had the highest amount of new foreclosures, as I stated before. It made up nearly 60% of all the foreclosures in the city, which again, Bristol Bay having single family townhome condominium, having a lot of dense population there. Not too surprising that that's where we saw the most foreclosures. And Wards 4 and 1 had the fewest number of foreclosures. Skipping down to future trends. So Illinois, Kendall County, and Yorkville all saw decreases in the foreclosures per homes and pretty large decreases in that. Whereas before, and I'm frozen again, I'm sorry guys. Before, you know, we were one house in every 872 homes. Now we're one house in every 8,721 homes. So just again, the CARES Act and the pandemic have very skewed these numbers in a good way, as there's not as many foreclosures. The one thing we do know is moving into next year, since it's 1 year, we can expect beginning of next year to be very similar to the end of this year, and that there's no regulations on how, when the forbearance period ends, there's no regulations on how mortgage companies will collect that. So you could see lump sum payments, you could see you know, them raising rates. So we'll see how that affects foreclosures in the future next year.
Any comments or questions? Okay, we're good. Thank you for the nice, all your nice charts and everything. Let's go on to 6, CDC 2021-06, 9261 Kennedy Road, Marion, a 1.5 mile review. Can I see,
Alderman Peterson is with us now, too.
Okay,
we're ready to go?
All right.
Yeah. So, this is a request for a variance in the county. So it is within our 1.5 mile planning boundaries, so we get the opportunity, the city gets an opportunity for a review and send comments back to the county. They are requesting a variance for a driveway. Typically, the county requires a 5-foot setback from the property line. They're requesting a 0-foot setback. The property is east of 47 and north of Kennedy Road. So 9227 Kennedy Road. So it is just north of where McHugh hits Kennedy. Again, the proposed project, an 18-foot wide driveway running up the eastern side of the property. There's already access point there, but this provides better access to that back lot since it does not have frontage on Kennedy Road. The main reason for this is there is a floodplain on the site, and this driveway, if it's put all the way over to the east, will avoid the 100-year floodplain. So they're trying to keep their driveway out of the water. And in the future, they are planning on building a house in the back, a single family home. In terms of our comprehensive plan, which is what we look at when we do these kinds of reviews to see if it's in line with future development, we have this area set aside for estate conservation residential, which is large lot single family homes. This request does not in any way affect that. We don't anticipate any development in this or annexation here anyway. So it really is in line with our comprehensive plan. After staff's review, we did not have any comments or objections to this request. So we're seeking EDC's comments to give to them. And I believe Matt Esselmeyer is here from the county. And I'm not sure if the petitioner's here, but if you have questions for him or me, you can, this would be the time.
Okay, any comments, questions? Concerns? Alderman Frieder?
I think it looks cool. Roll with it.
Okay, we are all okay. So, we can move that one on. And they have to go to City Council?
That'll go to Planning and Zoning January 13th, and then it'll go to the 26th City Council.
Okay. Got a good positive recommendation, move on. Let's go to 7, EDC 2021-07, non-conforming signs with text amendments.
You should be familiar with this from the last city council meeting. The mayor brought this issue up. The city decided to move forward with a text amendment to try to address any issues we may have with existing legally non-conforming signs in the future that may want to change from a static message board to an electronic message board. So staff looked at it from a perspective of, let's see if this is an issue just along our major thoroughfares, which businesses have been impacted by the widening roads, faster travel along with more vehicles, to see if that is something that we can assist these businesses with without having them to fully come into compliance with the sign code. So we did a little analysis and we found that along our existing major thoroughfares that the largest portion of these non-conforming signs where you would probably see someone wanting to do this change would be along 47, which is Bridge Street, which we kind of figured. But then the mayor asked that we look into those non-residential uses that are not on a major thoroughfare to see if there's any merit in offering the same ability to those particular businesses. So we did look at several of these side streets or just non-major thoroughfares, and we found that more than 50% of those signs would possibly be able to benefit from this if they decided to change from a static sign to a digital sign. It may not be likely in these particular areas because you would see the digital being more for those types of impulse buying or non-destination shops. So you want to get your message out that you have a sale on something, but it may be beneficial. So there's merit in including those as well. Staff has posted this for a public hearing at next week's Planning and Zoning Commission, and we just wanted to get some feedback if there's any further direction that the EDC would like staff to take on this matter.
Do you have any comments or questions on this item? Alderman Kreider?
Yeah, I think the way that you guys drafted it, especially considering that this is something that, yes, in a perfect world, everyone would move to a monument and we wouldn't have all this light pollution and we could go back to our palm fronds hanging over like they used to. I just don't think we're going to be returning to that world for a couple decades, maybe. And I think when you allow someone that's a small business the opportunity to improve something without having to completely come out of pocket for the price of a brand new car or four, you encourage them to invest in their business and do something that they think is an opportunity for them to gain more, whether it's a foothold in the local business, or you find a way to improve upon hitting those the 80 and the 20. You don't know what that means. That means that 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. So part of what I am looking forward to, and this goes through as far as the one sign that brought this to our attention, is seeing what other types of businesses that haven't considered this type of improvement will actually make an investment in their actual grounds. And yes, there's going to be a couple more lollipops for a few more decades. That doesn't bother me. But I like the idea of not making it so we're removing the ability for someone to invest in their business unless they're ready to come out of pocket for $100,000 or more. So kudos for being creative and approaching this, knowing that you're really not going to get away from it. But I also think it's kind of a good move, especially now, if you get businesses looking at spending more money on their business and the way that they are kind of approaching those main thoroughfares with their signage, maybe we'll see kind of a resurgence of people kind of taking some more more pride in their businesses and investing in them, and then we get to, you know, sit there in traffic and look at all the coupons and then pull in and take advantage of them. So I'm all for a coupon once in a while, and I think the best way to do it is to allow them to spend money on themselves. Maybe we'll even come up with a grant program.
Any other comments?
I would just add to that that I think it's good that we address this now. Otherwise, we're going to be dealing with this every time it comes up. So I'd kind of like to resolve it now, and then maybe we won't have as many issues going forward.
Anybody else?
I agree. I like that we can address it now rather than wait till later. It does look nice. It will be a nice improvement.
Alderman Funkhauser, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah. I know I'm the minority in this conversation, but we're moving the goalposts on this one. It was 6 years ago when we had a massive overhaul of this ordinance. We didn't have outcry from the businesses at that time to change this, nor did staff recommend we change this from the 2008 amendment that we had. The whole purpose is for us to bring our signage into a more palatable look and feel for Route 47 and 34 and our thoroughfares. I get that you don't want to come out of pocket for this, but if somebody spends $30,000 on just an LED board, what's another $5,000 if you're doing a resin base similar to what KFC just did for their sign? They came into conformance, and granted, I know some people can say, well, that's not a small business, that's a corporate entity, it's a multi-million dollar one. Now, franchisees, they have to conform with whatever the corporate says. So I get there's bigger pockets in places, but some of these businesses, they're doing very well, some are not doing as well. I just have kind of an issue moving the goalposts after we have made so many other businesses come into conformance with something that wasn't objected to 6 years ago or in 2008 when this originally was changed. So I would prefer us to steer the course on bringing signs into conformance. And with the maintenance line item, you know, I get that, you know, trying to make it a little more palatable, but to take an entire sign out and just put in an LED and say, well, it's one for one. Well, it's really not. I mean, if they're going to go to that cost, what's the difference of doing, you don't have to do masonry, you can do the faux masonry. It saves a ton of money. It looks almost the same, and it's a much easier installation process. As shown by a couple of the other businesses that have placed signs in. So I'd like us to consider this from a perspective of trying to be consistent with what we have been implementing over this past 6 years and the overall goal of the comprehensive plan, the sign ordinance, and just trying to have a more cohesive signage appeal through our city.
Alderman Frieder?
Yeah, I totally get that, but this always goes back to the idea that government is smart. We make a rule to encourage uniformity, conformity, but at the end of the day, we want to make sure that nobody is distracted and crashes their car into a paint store. Nobody can't see the person turning and they end up colliding in the middle of the intersection. A lot of what is considered aesthetic or investments in your business are all based on someone else's idea and approval. So part of the issue that I've had with a lot of the sign discussions that we had, at least over the last 7 years that I've been a part of this, is that I don't care. As long as someone doesn't get hit, the sight lines don't make it impossible for people to see people in the crosswalk, and nobody's going to get killed. Outside of that, you can kind of do what you want to do as long as it's not going to be glaring in somebody's house and they're going to be dealing with flashing lights all day. We're talking about a heavily traveled area, a sign that has been there since I've been in Yorkville, in my recollection, and something that if we're looking in the effort of public safety, I know that trying to change those letters with a suction cup on a pole is rather dangerous. But, you know, just trying to be kind of looking at this from the human angle, if we're going to make it a rule that you do this, that, and the other thing for this specific reason, makes sense. But once in a while, you either have to have a little wiggle or realize that maybe 6 years ago, we were so strict on something that the reason why nobody has come forward and complained about it is because it seemed like the goalposts were so freaking far away that they couldn't do something about it. So in this instance, somebody's like, you know what? I got to start capturing more of these impulse people coming through. Not everybody's going to want to do this. This is something where you are at an intersection that is routinely stopped. Now, I shop at Jewel for that lobster mac and cheese just like anybody, and I am routinely stopped going south on 47 right at Paradise. Now, granted, yes, I'm only looking in steam and he's wishing me a happy new year, but knowing the location of where it is and that it isn't facing any homes, I think this is an excellent opportunity for us to go, let's be human about this and understand that somebody, yeah, he kind of jumped the gun and made a mistake and kind of got a loan and went for it. Understand that it's not just two businesses involved anymore, the sign company and the company who's buying the sign. It's the sign company, the bank you got the loan with, the company itself is putting the sign up, and now you've got the city involved. Well, all the previous attempts at people putting in signs that were on lollipops, I don't remember any discussion because it never really went anywhere because it's, nope, that's the ordinance, let it go. Well, now we have someone coming to a government, which is not human, and saying, can we look at this like a human? And that's what we're doing here. So from my perspective, the main reason why 6 years ago nothing really happened is because nobody cared and complained about it. Signs are not my business. And if they ain't going to kill nobody and they're not going to cause someone to get hurt, then I'm pretty much okay with that. So understanding that, yes, we have these things in place to make sure that we're hitting standards and we look a certain way. But do you know that at City Council, I've been sitting behind a freaking used kitchen cabinet as my desk for 8 years? Nobody said anything about that, and now we're worried about lollipop signs? I think we need to get our priorities straight and start supporting the small businesses that are here, or else all these other businesses, the corporate ones, are going to flock to Yorkville, and we're going to have six of the same restaurant, and they're all going to have matching signs. I don't think this is something where we want to start dissecting every move that we've done 6 years ago and saying, well, now we should stay the course. I don't think the course should be stayed at all. It's now a global pandemic, and people need to be able to do something to reinvigorate and reignite their business. This is how they're attempting to do it. It's not going to hurt anybody. Let them do it.
Anybody else? I just have two comments. One to Alderman Frieder's. I think we never had this problem before, and I'm not picking on the business,
But I think other people did it in the right order, and they did some research and maybe investigated what could we put up. So then they were, you know, right away saying, oh, okay, we can't put that kind of sign up. This person didn't do that. And we keep saying it's a pandemic, but hey, that's pretty good. And I'm glad that business is doing well. They're a fantastic business. But they have the money, and they could get a loan. There's a lot of other little businesses out there that don't have the money. So I think we got to put that in perspective and not say, oh, this is because of the pandemic.
I don't think the difference here is the fact that they
wouldn't be able to put this out. So I think we haven't seen it before because people have gone through the right channel. So that is one thing. Pardon?
And they never contacted an alderman or elected official. I've never once heard anybody talk about a sign problem. They heard a no, and they said, oh, I guess that's a no.
Well, and you're right. But, and then just as a point of history, because I've been here for so long, when I was clerk, and they talked about this past council, one of the big concerns with not even wanting the digital signs, which were first coming in, was that we didn't want it to look tacky. We didn't want everybody to have one sign. We didn't want the diversion, you know, at that point, the city was looking at not wanting the diversion of every, you know, one at every business. So it's just something to put out there. Right? That's kind of where I think the effect is the ordinance as it is, because there was a lot of opposition to those when they were first. I remember when the school put it up, because they don't fall under our jurisdiction, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, we don't want those kind of signs. So just to keep that in mind, as a point of history, that I know in the past it was talked about that the city didn't want to attack with 50 million of the signs. So, anybody else got anything on this? Alderman Peterson?
Yes, so correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just a variance to allow an addition to a lollipop sign, right?
No, I'll be clear. There's some misconceptions of what staff has done. So we are not allowing lollipop signs. This is not what this ordinance does. What this ordinance does is allow for a legally non-conforming sign that already has a message board portion to their sign to exchange that out one for one for a digital sign. So there are a lot of signs that are along major thoroughfares and in other parts of the city that are legally non-conforming, but they don't have existing message board signs that are manual. So they would not be able to then just be able to put a digital face into their sign. So we try to, as a planner, I understand where Alderman Funkhauser is coming from because I worked on the 2014 update to the sign code. There does need to be a break where businesses do come into conformance, but we threaded the needle in a way that we allow for people that already had some type of messaging on their sign to be able to upgrade their technology, but still stay within the bounds of their existing sign size. So we're not granting variances. We're not actually allowing non-conforming signs as lollipops to start popping up along 47. We're just giving an opportunity for a modification under a maintenance definition, which we clarified in the ordinance as well, so that these individuals can change this particular portion of their sign.
So it's a modification, and there's not a likelihood that we would have an uptick of signs of this nature and things of this happening anywhere else, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Christy, how many signs exist in the city that this could change over? Do we know?
So in my memo, there's a chart, and it details out the types of signs that are legally non-conforming along major thoroughfares and in the non-major. So in the major thoroughfares, you have about 56 of those. But not all 56 of those signs have a message board.
Okay, do we know how many have the message board? Do we?
I do have my data, but I'd have to go back and tell you how many of those would have that. And then in the non-major, you have 25, and hardly any of them have message boards because they're just identification signs of the business name. So you would not see a lot of that along the non-major thoroughfares either.
So like, just to throw it out, like Smokies on my side of town, they have a message sign. So in the event they can go and put a digital one, as long as it's made within their boundaries.
Correct. And remember, a lot of the signs that are on 47 were granted variances as part of the 47 widening, so they were able to get a variance. They came in and asked for a variance, and we gave them blanket variances so that they could maintain their existing signs because they were non-conforming in distance or some other fashion. So, yeah, if they have an existing message board, they could come in. They would have to meet the standards, which is no more than 50% of the sign can be in this. They can't just have one big message board. So, yeah, that would be a potential one that would fall under this board.
That's just for an example. Any other comments or questions? Okay, are we all okay sending this on to City Council then?
Yeah. Oh, this will go to PZC next week.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We're good with that? Moving on?
Yeah.
Okay, go to public hearing with us. And then we have 8, EDC 2021-08, sign code, and it's for discussion.
Okay, so we don't actually have anything to talk about tonight. This agenda item was for the purposes of the mayor bringing forth a couple different, discussion points and topics on the sign code, and we haven't had time to talk to them about it yet, so we can push this one to February, if that's okay.
Okay. So, moving on for next month if we need to. Okay. So, old business, EDC 2020-32. Urban chickens, which I heard on the news is the new rage because they are also good for emotional support animals. Any comments or questions on them?
Proposal that you guys asked for back in December, the staff just put it together in an ordinance form, and to make it short, we're allowing it in the E1, R1, and R2 districts, so it's about 65 parcels that would be able to take benefit of this change. It's gonna be properties 1 acre or larger, maximum of 8 chickens. They have to be located in the rear or side yard and 25 feet setback from any property line. Our current property maintenance and performance standards would address any sanitation issues. They will be required to have an enclosure and a coop of a certain size, no slaughtering. Roosters are permitted up to age of 4 months, and that is because you won't immediately be able to tell if it's a hen or a rooster, and then that gives the owner a little bit of time to rehome that rooster, so they're just not
slaughter it.
Yeah, exactly, and so they're not immediately not in compliance.
Christy, can I mention something about the roosters? In a commercial setting, that rooster ran out of the truck. So if you can't slaughter them, good luck trying to farm it off to somebody as a pet or something. I don't know how you would get rid of the rooster. So
How would we know if they did that?
So my research found that you can call the local animal shelter, and they have been inundated with birds or fowl, particularly chickens, after people realize they're a lot of work. So the local animal control would be able to handle it.
I see a huge issue there.
Pardon me?
Go ahead, Alderman Cole. Did you have something else?
No, just the whole rooster part. It just seems like it's really muddies, but that's my opinion.
Okay. Christy, did anybody reach out to Kendall County's animal control?
No, I have not reached out to Kendall County's animal control.
They're kind of persnickety sometimes. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't see them taking chickens.
And what would happen if someone got 4 roosters? You find out 8 weeks or 10 weeks down the road that you have 4 roosters to get rid of that.
Yeah, so the code doesn't prescribe the remedy. It just says you can't have them.
Yeah.
So it would be up to us to either take it or send it to court, and then the person to figure out how they were going to deal with it. And I submit that if the title of the code is urban chickens, and that the roosters need to be getting rid of, those roosters can become rural chickens.
There's really nothing stopping a person from just letting the chicken go in an urban setting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we could be inundated with wild chickens. I do such things as feral chicken?
Yes.
Yeah.
Need to be able to block the roosters. Bart?
And finally, there's no inspection required, just a $25 one-time fee. The changes to the ordinance, again, would be in the building code, just like our beekeeping amendment was, and there's some slight changes in the police section in regards to exempting them from some of the, or, and adding them to some of the definitions that already exist. So if you have any other questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
I would like to hear from the chief on this, too.
Okay, so let's do Alderman Streeter first.
The only big concern I had was like the complaint process, and it says that the community development director or somebody else will do it. Christy, does that mean that you would be the one, or would it be Jason?
So it would be Gina, Pete, or maybe myself. It depends. We're all involved in those processes.
If it's ever Christy, can you please notify me so I can tag along as the cameraman? Because this is something I got.
As a clarification, Joel, I can't actually catch a chicken that's running around and tried before. I actually had to do that when I was in Freeport. Me and two other guys spent like 4 hours chasing three chickens around downtown Freeport. It does not work. I'm not rocking.
I'm discussing this now because, like, I know there's a chicken joke in here somewhere, but as long as we know that there is a potential for this to get out of hand, and there's got to be a chicken-related euphemism for get out of hand. But I don't want things to get all fucked up because I know that you guys are focusing on your work at City Hall. But I think this is something where we need to have, like, maybe this is something that you guys discuss every year as, like, a sunset clause to make sure these chickens aren't getting out of control. Because the last thing I want to do is abandon my post and have all these chickens running around Yorkville and no way of reining these chickens back in.
Keith Johnson, did you have a comment to add into?
So the comments I have are strictly, obviously, you know, my position is more, you know, when you look at ordinances or laws coming out, it's the enforcement of those. So there were a few things that were written in the ordinance that I know Christy and I talked about with, you know, how do you enforce certain sections in the ordinance that are in there. And, you know, one of the sections was, I believe, 8-19-2. And it talks about the interference with the normal enjoyment of human and animal life of others. I'm not sure how you enforce that. Somebody asked me, well, I don't understand what you mean. Give me an example. And so the example that I can see coming would be you have one house that has a fence with chickens and you have another house that has a fence with dogs. The chickens are running around, the dogs are barking and going crazy, and now the people with the chickens are saying the dog's messing with my chicken, or vice versa. And I there's probably, like Joel said, a joke in there with that. But when I look at enforcement, I always try to look and see how we can do it where it's not gonna be unduly burdensome. It is very obvious to me that Christy was very thoughtful and light in the ordinance, which I really appreciate. So a couple other sections in there, or actually should say one of them, section 8-19-4. I know Christy and Kathy have talked, but if you do have a concern with the sanitation, smell, odor, somebody complains, how difficult is it gonna be to walk onto someone's property because they have that right to privacy on their property? And do any enforcement on there. It's probably more of a Kathy question. Just not something that I necessarily as a police department want to get involved in, but I think it's something as a city we need to think about. That's all. So those would be my comments.
I would like to add something. To both of my neighbors have bird dogs. They have. So let's say I had chickens. It would be just asking for a huge problem if these dogs jump the fence or get out the fence and they go after them. Their instinct is to hunt them. And then I do know, I've gotten some information from several HOAs that previously didn't have the language in their ordinances, and I think if we pass this, I think that you're going to see that change as well.
Okay,
Keep in mind that the lots have to be 1 acre or more. So we contemplated the issue with neighbors so that they're not so close, and then the 25-foot setback. So hopefully that should quell any issues if the neighbor has a dog. The second thing that we addressed, which Chief Jensen brought up, was that kind of vague language that has to do with your enjoyment of your property. In zoning and land use parlance, that really refers to performance standards. Are you blocking my ability to get air, sunlight, odor, or sound? So that's how we would enforce it if it broke any of those performance standards. Other than that, that would be a civil matter between two residents.
Well, I was just going to comment with Alderman Cook. I agree with the dogs. I've got a dog that tries to catch turkey vultures and goes nuts in the yard.
Oh, yeah.
If she saw a chicken on the ground, it's dead meat. So I agree that that could be a potential problem.
I can verify. I know someone on the west side of Aurora that they had chickens because it was in the outside the city limits, so it was county. The neighbor's dog got in there, tore up the chickens, and it went to a lawsuit. So that's just, I couldn't believe that that was what they were going to sue about, but it went that way.
So what do we want to do with this? Alderman Funkhauser.
I just want to toss out a couple things. Looking at this, we're only allowing 65 parcels in the entire city to do this. I've been saying this from the get-go that the 1 acre is too large. I think the 12,000 square foot lots, I know it changes and it gets us up to, potentially several thousand, because the number in the memo I think was 4,000 or 5,000 if it goes down to a 10,000 square foot lot. But I just think that this we're not doing a service if we're going to consider this and only consider 65 lots in the city. So I want us to look at seriously saying, instead of 1 acre, the 12,000 square foot lots. Because we're not allowing anybody to really do it. You've got a couple in the city that might do it, and what's the point? If you're going to have two people that do it, what's the point in going through putting this on the records and doing it? If we're going to do it, let's make it available to people who really want to do it, which our standard lots in the city are 12,000 square feet. We've got smaller lots, but that's our average. And then the 25-foot setback from the property line, I know that relates to to everything, fencing, the coop, everything. I think the coop is okay to be 25 feet from the property line. That's just the building, but I think if we're gonna do this with a smaller lot, we should allow it to be closer to the fence or to the property line, whether it's 5 feet or on fence. I really think that if we're gonna do this, we should do it right or just don't do it at all, because we've been back and forth on this thing. 65 parcels, at this point, just kill this thing. If we're not going to allow the city to actually do it, just kill this and be done with it. But most all of our lots are 12,000 square feet. Either we do this or we don't.
Not that I'm for giving food, I'm not a big chicken person, but we are limiting it to 65 lots. Really, why are we doing it? That's my thought.
You're preheating the oven.
We're
understand the process and the policies, and then if someone after get the process started, and this is what I think I've been kind of coming from this entire time, is that we've got two people that asked for this, one specifically that is on a larger lot. The other people that had contacted me prior haven't had any feedback, and we've discussed this the other 700 or 1,100 times that we've talked about chickens. Since there hasn't been any interest from somebody who says, hey, this is where I live and this is the size of my lot, since we've talked about these actual specific things that Christie's put into the ordinance, I think we've spent an inordinate amount of time discussing something that nobody really wants in the first place. So the fact that we're at a place where we have some idea, we have some structure, we started with something based on no real information besides one person who lives on a property with over an acre, I think we're at a good place. It's also like when we talked about beekeeping,
even if you permit it and nobody applies for it in the first year, second year, third year, the fact that you did it and is now part of your city history, and the fact that, hey, we're trying to not only be forward thinking, but we're trying to also come along with the interests of the times. These things ebb and flow. And if you start with something saying, all right, every 12,000 square foot lot has the possibility of getting chickens, if this, then that, if this, then that, if this, then that, yeah, that's fine. But if we have no real experience with anybody applying for it and seeing how it goes, I almost think like the trial run or the oven preheating makes the most sense with these 65 lots. See what happens. And if somebody says, hey, I want to apply, and then see what happens. Because there's no precedent here, because nobody cares except one person. And this is built for that person.
If I could. And nobody cares about anything that we're doing right now because of COVID. I mean, we don't have people coming out for anything that we're doing. Plain and simple. I mean, unless it's a topic that one person's concerned about, nobody comes out. Nobody cares. I mean, we have the least amount of participation in our city government than any of our surrounding communities. I don't quite understand. Either we're doing a fantastic job or people just don't care. But to that end, why don't we put a cap on the permits for the first year? You know, pick a number, put a cap on it. Make it 12,000 square feet, put a cap on it. 10 permits, 15 permits. Problem solved. We don't have 4,000, but at least we have the ability for those who have those standard city size lots to be able to participate and see how it goes for 1 year.
That's how we approach the beekeeping ordinance. So
yeah, put a cap on it. Let's open it to 12,000 and put a cap on it.
Compromise. I'd rather see that, I think, than us doing something for acre lots, which we don't only allow 65 people. Now there's 65 people, we don't want one family dairy.
How about you do this, we'll do this now, make it happen, just frickin' sign something. And then next phase, or when we actually put the chicken in the oven, so to say, then we talk about that cap. It's almost,
I think we do it now. That's what I'd say. Do it now. Move it. Since does this have to go for
do something
public hearing?
No, because it's only going to affect the building regulation section and the police. It does not require a public hearing.
So, Alderman Koch, what do you think if we did the 12,000 lots with the camp of, say, like 10?
Six.
Six? Well, we had 65 at an acre, so... Alderman Peterson, do you have any suggestions?
Not really. I'm still trying to take it all in, because it's, I mean, that's an interesting point, opening it up to you, so many permits. I'd still like to be a little bit bigger lot, though, in my opinion, but
same here.
Well, if it was up to me, I'd end it right now and say, I don't care about people changing. I know no one's come out, but really, if they were passionate about it, I think people would find a way of coming out and contacting. I've got no emails on it, nothing here in Ward 2. So Ward 2 people, we don't have the size lot. I'm probably one of those few people that probably have chickens in my lot, and I'm not the other one. So it's like, why, you did all this work, and like you have a point. Who really cares about it? So, I mean, we can send it to the council and see, or we kill it now. Alderman Streeter just saying.
You send this to council without any backbone behind it, Mayor Purcell's going to have you for dinner.
Yeah, he's already waiting for it. Yeah.
We got one chicken joke out of there. Let's just kill it. Let's slaughter this. And if somebody wants, if more than one person wants this in 2022, and five aldermen agree.
You can revisit it. I see Alderman Koch, you're like.
I agree with Joel.
Nodding your head. Are you nodding to kill it?
I agree with Joel, yeah.
Alderman Peterson?
I cry foul. I said we kill it.
That's two.
Okay, let's fricassee this baby and put it to rest. So, it's not moving on, it's dead.
Sorry, Chris.
Get in with the train horn. It'll come back in a year. Okay, so do we have any additional business? Hearing none, it is 6:57, and let's adjourn this meeting. Everybody, have a good evening.
Thank you.
day.
Thank you for killing that. Yes.
That went in a direction I didn't expect it to go.
Absolutely.
Went in a few directions I didn't expect it to go.
Well, really, right now, I know four places that have, so if people are having now and there's not an issue, that means they have good neighbors and they don't put their neighbors off.